Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by ToughManTry.com, Everyone.org. That's EVERYWON.org. Cool new half marathon and 5K series coming up in the Bay Area July 24th. RunCatalina.com, Catalina Eco Marathon, coming up on Saturday, November 19th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $70 million to keep challenged athletes the game of life through sports. And you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes or on Babbittville.com. And as always, endurance lives here. Great success story in the world of cycling and triathlon. FlowCycling.com, created by the brothers John and Chris Thornham. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, Bob. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much for taking time. Now, you guys are both mechanical engineers, and growing up, when did you guys find cycling? Were you in other sports beforehand?
Yeah, I was actually a triathlete. So after I graduated from university, I started working an engineering job, and I was always physically active. I competed in ski racing and taekwondo and all those things growing up. And for a number of years, I was just going to the gym and staying in shape, and I missed the competition. So I read a men's health article on triathlon and thought, I think I could do one of those. And the typical story, you start with a sprint, and you work your way up, and then I was hooked. So that's how we got into it.
And both of you at the same time?
John actually has never done a triathlon, but he does ride a bike.
So Chris is a triathlete. John is a cyclist.
That's correct, yeah. And I got into the sport, and after we started the business, John kind of got into the whole cycling thing as well, and now we're both hooked.
What I love is the fact that, you know, basically started with Chris looking for race wheels, and, you know, the options were, A, you get the real expensive, wind tunnel tested, aerodynamically superior, the best wheels out there, or you sort of compromise and go, okay, I'll get something that's lesser than. Chris,
correct.
Was that when you decided, you know what, there's got to be something, you can't just have high and low, there's got to be something in the middle there.
Exactly. And, you know, I think at the time, you know, prior to when we started, Zip and Head held that patent that allowed them to be the only ones to design in that space. And when I purchased wheels, it was right at the time where that patent was expiring. And I thought, you know, we can kind of merge the best of both worlds. Like, the other guys were charging a cheaper price because of their sales model. They go direct to the consumer, which is 95% of the reason why the cost is higher. But you're missing the engineering side. So with our engineering backgrounds, we thought, you know, why don't we do all the design work that's required to design a product that competes with the best products out there, but go to the factories where those things are produced, have them make our product instead, import it, and then sell it directly to the consumer. And we merged the best of both worlds. We were the first to do that, and it's been a success so far.
What's interesting to me, I didn't realize that Zip and Head owned the patent so that no one else could make wheels. That's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, there was a specific patent that was on the toroidal shape of the patent. So that was what was the real limiter for anyone else trying to get into the space. You could do other things. You could design other wheels, but that was really what made things at the time fast. And then when that expired, we jumped on that and made some stuff that was fast.
Well, the other thing that's interesting to me, it's not like you guys were going, okay, we're going to go to China and we're going to make, you know, some widget. We're going to do something that you can make really, really cheaply. You're talking about, you know, you're talking about carbon fiber. You're talking about very, very expensive, intricate products. Had you sourced things out of Asia before? Or was this a first timer for you?
You know, we never sourced anything out of Asia. It was a thing that I think, being young and being naive, we just said, well, we can do that. So
I love that.
Yeah, and we did. I mean, we worked with our initial factories that we selected. We had four of them, and we still work with four today. We hit three out of the park, and one was a complete dud. The one that was a dud was a carbon fiber factory out of China. We opened some molds over there, and we learned the hard way that you don't always get what you say you're going to get. That was our introduction to international import-export business in general. We had been doing design work for about a year, and just before we were supposed to sell the product for the first time in 2011, around, it was the spring of 2011, we were in contact with the factory. There had been some issues, and they just said, you know, they were rushed. There was going to be some things that were going to be fixed. And last minute they told us, you know, we don't know how to make wheels. We're waiting for you to come over and teach us how to make them.
So welcome to Asia.
We said, oh, that's interesting. So we said, you know, we're done. At the time, Chris and I mean, we had no money. The company, we'd spent a ton of money trying to get everything going with the first factory. So we had enough money for one plane ticket. Chris jumped on a plane and went to Taiwan and started knocking on doors. And basically, we kind of narrowed it down to a few key factories. One of them was a clear winner for us, and they're still our partner today. I mean, we were there last week, and I mean, we are probably now, just because of volume reasons, we've grown a lot since we started, and the relationship, I think, is just good, very good for both of us. And we couldn't do our business without them. So we lucked out, I guess, in the long run. So
yeah,
we're very fortunate.
That's the time when I went over 6 years ago. I sat at the factory, and they're arguably the best carbon fiber wheel producer in Taiwan. And we were the small guy who were trying to scrape enough money together to put – to get one order of the minimum quantity required.
Yeah.
And I basically begged and pleaded this guy to give us a chance. And when we left last week, he told us that we are their biggest buyer to date. So it was pretty cool change over the last few years, yeah.
Now, did you guys leave other jobs to take this on?
Okay, good question. So we were working for a company at the time, and we've been there for probably 2 or 3 years, and we had done well at the company. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but we were both sales engineers, and we'd won sales awards. We had done well. About the fall of 2011, our boss manager found out that we were starting something, which wasn't against any company policy. There was it wasn't moonlighting. There were several people that had businesses on the side.
Sure.
For some reason, he didn't like it, and they kind of gave us an ultimatum and said, either you leave here or you stop running your business. So this was December. By the time it had all kind of shaken out, it was December of 2011.
Christmas present.
We hadn't sold a product. Yeah, Christmas time. And my brother and I looked at each other and said, let's roll the dice. So we both walked in the next day. We put in our 2 weeks' notice, and we started our sales in February of 2012, so about 3 months later. And we sold out about two containers in an hour. So we were very fortunate, very lucky. It went the complete opposite direction. We could have fallen flat on our faces, but we've been very fortunate. So we made the right decision looking back.
So originally, I mean, when you guys were trying to figure out what to make wheel-wise, you reached out to the triathlon community through Slow Twitch, right, to get a sense of, hey, what do you guys think in getting feedback from, you know, triathletes have always been the early adopters. They're the ones who try everything, right? So how important was that to, you know, making sure that, you know, you built a group of followers, but also you got some, I'm sure, valuable feedback?
You know, it started. We started another business before this company started, and it was our first time doing it. And we thought, you know, we can't tell anyone what we're doing because someone will steal our idea and it will be useless. And what we learned in that process was that hiding something until it comes out isn't really the best marketing plan always. And we also learned in that process that we had no idea how to market. So when we started Flow, we spent a considerable amount of time researching marketing. Engineers don't learn a lot about that. So we took our own time and learned about marketing. And we thought, you know, if we're going to make a product for triathletes and road cyclists, we can keep it secret and we can make a product that we think people are going to want to buy and then hope when we release it that they actually will want to buy it.
Or we can kind of tell this story as we go and ask for feedback from people and ask them, what do you want to buy? And, you know, we kept the whole design process very open. Help people help design our logo. They help pick the type of carbon fiber. They help pick other cosmetic things. And by the time we got to our first sale, people felt like they were part of the process. And, you know, it all started on FlowTwitch. I just said, we're thinking of starting a wheel company. Are we crazy? And, you know, we got a lot of varied opinions, but there was enough interest there. Some people told us we were crazy, but there seemed to be an abundance of people who said, if you guys can actually bring this product to market, I'll buy it. And that was enough for two guys in their late 20s who really wanted to leave their job to throw it all on the table and give it a go.
So are you guys twins, or what's the age difference?
We're identical twins.
Yeah. I'm 1 minute older than Bill.
I've known a lot of twins through the years, and twins are either A, they finish each other's sentences, they're totally connected, or it's like, hey, he's wearing that, I'm wearing this. It's like totally, right? It's like you've got quit saying that I look like that guy, right? So obviously it seems like you guys are the former, that you guys.
Yeah. It's funny. My mother always used to say, they wear the same things but with different colors. So, you know, we don't have names like Pete and Repeat or anything like that.
Yeah.
We are very close. We've been best friends our whole lives. And yeah, there's major similarities, but if you notice, there's also major differences between the two of us, which I think actually is a big benefit, because the strengths that I have actually are not always the strengths that Chris has, and vice versa. So we kind of make a good partnership, is, you know, for just friends in general, which we've always been, and in business as well.
You complement each other well. So
when you
first got the prototypes, and I can't even imagine how exciting that was, because this has been a dream you've been working on for a couple of years. So March 2011, you get your prototypes, you take them out for a ride. What were your first thoughts?
Well, we're actually quite blown away by it. Growing up, you know, I was always a kid that was taking the VCR downstairs to try and take it apart and figure out how it worked. My mom didn't like that very much, but, you know, I always wanted to figure out how things worked. And as you're growing up, you know, you build stuff, or you try to build things and you try to put them together, and sometimes they just don't turn out like you had envisioned. I had a vision for what I wanted the product to be. I had a sense for what it should be. And when I got it, it was more than I wanted it to be. So it was kind of one of those things where it all worked. It all lined up.
And I think with the hard falls that we had previous to that, with the factory that didn't work, and, you know, there were so many variables that did not work for us. When we finally got the product that did work, it made it so much better in the end. And it was just such a satisfying day.
So when you have prototype in March 2011, it's really almost a full year, right? Until you're able to do the pre-sale. You get the product and you know it's great. What was that next 11 months? Actually, 11 months. Yeah, about 11 months.
Yeah,
that must have been driving you a little crazy.
Oh, it was driving us absolutely nuts. I mean, the biggest thing for me was that we went through factory changes. We went through a whole number of things in that time. And it's just, when you're starting a company with, I mean, we've been fortunate. We're still 100% owners. We've self-funded the thing from the ground up.
Wow.
And it's great. But when you are self-funding it and
it's
there's
tough.
Problems and things, it's hard. I mean, there's many nights I sat up on the edge of the bed going, how do we fix this?
Yeah.
And we've been fortunate to know Jim Felt is a guy we consider a friend.
One of the best.
And through he's a great guy, and we've known him for years now. And every time we see him, we kind of sit and talk. And he said to us at one time, he goes, you know, as a business owner, you're a firefighter. You walk around with a fire extinguisher on your back, and you put one fire out, and you go to the next one, and you put that fire out. And I guess that year for us, is that story. I mean, it was just one fire after the next, and you just hope you can keep them at bay until you can get to the point where you actually
make some money.
And we did. We were very fortunate to get through all of that.
So in February 2012, you have your pre-sale. At 9:59 a.m., you got 600 people from 20 countries waiting online, and you're at 10. 1 minute later, your server crashes.
Yeah,
yeah. So that was completely unexpected. It's one of those things where when you run a business, you don't really know until you fall flat on your face.
Well, we attempted to know.
You know, we talked to our hosting company and said, hey, what happens if this happens? And they said, you'll be fine.
Famous last words.
Yeah, they were wrong four times. And after the fourth time that we crashed in the sale, we just said, we need to fix this. So we reached out to a company in San Antonio, Texas, Rackspace, who they do scalable servers. And, you know, they're some of the biggest companies in the world use their services. So we reached out to them, and they actually had a startup program. It's typically for tech companies, but because of our unique situation where we are having these very high volume, you know, we could do 60 transactions a minute on our server during these sales. They said, you know, this is a really cool story. So they flew us out. They accepted us into their startup program. They did a marketing piece on it and gave us some free hosting for a couple months. And they really helped us streamline the system. So we've got it down to a science now. But, you know, every day we go from 360 days of the year, roughly, we're running three servers. Two are web servers that are load balanced in case one fails. You've got a database server. In total, you get about 2 gigs of RAM. Prior to one of these big sales, we're running four web servers that are 30 gigs each. So you have 120 gigs of web servers, and then there's a 30-gigabyte database server that backs that. So we're running a total of 150 gigs just to support one of these sales. It's pretty crazy.
So what I love is – yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, as an engineer who's designing a carbon fiber bicycle wheel, that's the last thing you think you're going to have to become well-versed in. Like, I can administer Linux servers in my sleep now, and, like, you know what I mean?
Just, you can help the next guy out figuring out when they launch their company,
And that's the beauty of being an entrepreneur, you know? You learn stuff you just never imagined you'd learn.
Yeah, you have to wear a ton of hats at that work.
Oh, yeah.
So between 10 and 10:30 that morning, you sell 747 wheels to 15 countries. Which is,
yeah.
How surprised were you guys at the reception? Did you have a sense that all these people were going to support you?
You know, it's kind of one of those things. When we first were starting this, we were saying, hey, if we sell 100 wheels our first year, we'll be doing okay. Like, we might be able to eat and we'll figure this out. We knew there was a lot of people that had signed up, but our previous business that was a failure, we just were kind of, we didn't want to count our eggs before they hatched. So, yeah, we were blown away. I mean, it was one of those things where you, I mean, I've probably been to 7 or 8 countries in my life. I couldn't fathom that many countries had purchased wheels and let alone then bought a product that nobody had seen, nobody had touched, nobody had really done anything to.
Wow.
So it was amazing, and it was actually really humbling, and just the fact that somebody would actually go out on a limb for a young company that was actually just trying to, I mean, our whole point of this is we're trying to give something to the consumer that is beneficial for the consumer and beneficial for everybody in the mix. So if you look at the old model and how it's broken down for retail, it's a great product. I'm not saying that these expensive wheels aren't good. They're very good wheels. There's nothing wrong with them at all. But from the consumer standpoint, dealing directly with the manufacturer and being able to reduce the cost by, you know, a half or a third is just a major benefit for everyone involved when you look at it that way. So that was our attempt. Our attempt was to try and help the consumer, and I guess the response sort of validated that we were, in fact, helping the consumer, and they wanted the product.
What type of response, because a lot of times, you know, retailers, especially cycling retailers, just feel with Amazon out there and people going direct, was there animosity from the shops that you weren't going through them, that you were going direct?
Two things. Consumer direct for us has
sort of always been our MO. Mm-hmm. And when we first started, we went to Interbike in 2010, and we talked to a number of people, met a number of people. The fact that we were a new wheel company, if we would have went to a retail show in 2010, nobody would have given us any attention to be placed in a shop. And rightfully
yeah, exactly.
so, I understand
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
The people that we spoke with that were in the industry initially had you can't do that. You're going to make everyone angry. This is a big mistake. You really need to reconsider your business model. It was, you know, warning sign after warning sign after warning sign. And for us, maybe it's because I think our age at Interbike at the time was probably at least a decade or two younger than most of the people that we were speaking with. Not that that's a problem.
Yeah.
But we just looked at it differently. And we believed at the time that the consumer wanted something differently. Today, looking back 5 years, 6 years ago, the general approach or the response that we get now is, you guys have really started something in this industry that hasn't been done before. You guys are on the right track. How are you doing what you're doing? So we took a big risk, and I think that it's paid off for us. But if we would have gone the standard retail route, I don't think we ever would have sold anything, because it would have been so hard to get into retail. So I think it's been the best of both worlds for us. It's been great because we've been able to kind of steer our company in a direction that's not ever been happened, and no one's gone before, and it's allowed us to get to the consumers that actually want the product.
And I think to answer your question directly about the animosity from shops or not, you get two responses. The first is, we hate you, you're consumer direct, right? So, and you'll get calls from customers who say, my bike shop said your products suck and I shouldn't buy them. And then you go through this discussion where you say, okay, why do they suck? And they say, well, they didn't have any reason for that. So you go through the components and the build specs, and they go, oh, it's the same product, and you get to that conclusion. The other is that, look, bike shops make a ton of money from service. That's where they make, I think, the majority of their money.
Yep.
And, you know, we've sold 16,000 wheels around the world now, so all of those customers eventually will need some type of service. It may not be service with a wheel, but maybe they have a question about how to change their brakes, or how to buy a new chain, or how to put new tires on. And I send a lot of people to bike shops. So I think the forward-thinking bike shops of today recognize that business can come from anywhere, even if you don't sell a product. That, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So we have great relationships with certain bike shops around the country, and we send a lot of people there, and they appreciate that, and they understand that we can also be a help to them as well.
Mutually beneficial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, because obviously it's a different era. Trying to get into a shop that has Zip and Head, and they've got a few other wheels, without a huge marketing program, you guys would have been lost in a shuffle. No one would have seen your product.
Exactly.
You know, you needed to go to direct to get any type of notice, right? And the fact
that you went
through and included folks in the process of developing the wheels, that was using the technology, the online technology that's out there right now to create a groundbreaking company. The other thing that I love about what you guys do is that right away, a lot of times companies become really big and go, you know what, we should give back to charity. We should do something. You guys started this right away from the, you know, from that first group of 747 wheels that were sold. You basically built 56 bikes, donated 56 bikes and helmets to your Bike for a Kid program. What was the genesis of, was that something that you wanted to do right from the beginning?
Definitely. It was, Chris and I have always sort of been involved in some type of service or, you know, socially responsible aspect of our lives. In school, we volunteered a lot. In university, we volunteered as well. There's a number of things that we did, and I think that when you're starting a company, I'm a big fan of a number of brands that have done stuff similar. Patagonia is a brand that's a very socially responsible company. You look at Tom's Shoes was newish at that time, and just because of our past and our backgrounds, we wanted to have a company that, you know, one of its founding principles was giving back, and it's
it's something that has evolved from from day one. The original idea was Bike for a Kid. Hey, we sell ceramic bearings in a set of wheels. Let's donate a bike and a helmet to a kid. You know, we're not going to make any more money from the wheel. We don't need to make any more money from the wheel. But I think the good that we do giving back is actually more beneficial to the community, to the people that we're giving them to.
Love that. As
the company grew and as Bike for a Kid grew, it became actually very challenging to find people to give things to. So, you know, when you start donating up to 500 bikes a year, that's more of a job. And we actually were very fortunate to find and work with More Than Sport, which is, you know, Chris Lieto's
yes.
nonprofit/profit arm of his world, and they've been an excellent facilitator for us, and they kind of took us in. I mean, we had some problems at the end of 2014, and we met, you know, we've known Chris, and we bumped into him at a party in Kona, where I think most business in this industry actually happens.
Yes.
I think more business happens there than Interbike, which is funny, but
no question.
Yeah, so we were sitting there talking to him, and we're just telling him our, you know, the pain points of what's going on. He said, well, we don't really do anything like that, but we'll do it. We'll figure it out.
And yeah.
We said, all right, let's talk. So we talked the next week, and we moved on. And I think today we're even evolving as a company in, as far as, you know, how do we become a more socially responsible company in everything that we do. And I think you'll see some changes here in the next year with things that we're doing. So it's always been very important to us and will continue to be one of the driving factors of what we do.
Well, I love that. And actually, it's funny because we were – you know, with our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we do get a number of people putting in for grants for bikes. You know, a lot of our amputees and a lot of folks coming back from different things. So we'll reach out and let you know. Maybe there's a fit there too.
That would be a great partnership. Yeah, I mean, More Than Sport and us and CAF would be a great partnership to put together. That would be something very cool to do.
Yeah,
love that. So I want to know what it looks like when you have 400 wheels in a 2-bedroom apartment. How did you guys figure that out?
Well, it goes back to you don't know until you do it, right?
Yeah.
So we thought, well, 400 cycling wheels, you could probably fit most of those in your garage. And that's not the case. We basically, we were floor to ceiling, room to room. We had essentially tunnels big enough to get from the bedroom to the bathroom to the kitchen and out the door.
Oh,
and we literally
that.
Filled an apartment. And then you think, well, how long does it take to put shipping labels and custom stickers and inspect 400 wheels? And we thought, well, we could probably do this in about 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
Well, about 2 weeks later, we were done. And I remember we went for a walk one night after. I mean, we worked 15-hour days, but we always tried to go walk somewhere, do something physically active to calm our minds down. And I looked at John, and he looked at me, and I said, we got a big problem here. How do we fix this? And, you know, the first day we processed 50 wheels. We processed our own wheels for about 2 years. And we did that because we needed to do that to get the business to a point where we could pay for someone else to do it.
Right.
And it was one of those just, you know, bear down and work 15-hour days for 2 weeks straight and get it done things that we did. But, you know, we got more efficient. I think our biggest day ever was 328 wheels we did in one day.
Sort of 300. Wait, no. 328. I know exactly how many we processed.
Oh, I know.
I know that doesn't sound that impressive. But
oh, it sounds real impressive. Two guys?
I mean,
328?
Like Henry Ford or whatever his name would have been extremely proud of the system we had.
Your Model T assembly line. I love that.
Oh, yeah. We were efficient at that point. Right. I didn't think of that.
And then we did that, like I said, for about 2 years. I think we personally shipped about 5,000 wheels. And then it got to the point where we were shipping so many wheels that we were falling behind on running the rest of the company. So every 6 weeks a container would land, and it would take a week to prepare for it, 2 weeks to get it out the door. Then you're 3 weeks behind on emails and marketing.
Marketing.
So you try and spend a week or two getting caught up, and the next container's landing, and you're back at it again.
So
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so when you guys, when you do, I know you're selling on a regular basis, but do you have you still do what you did at the beginning where you'll launch and you'll say, okay, we this morning at 10 a.m. is our next model, that
yeah.
type of thing.
Yes. So we just had our 25th one.
25th launch.
So typically a container has anywhere between 600 and 800 wheels on it.
Okay.
And to date, still, with the exception of one or two, I think, or three, they have all sold out in about 5 or 10 minutes. We just had our – so we just spent the last 15 months designing a brand-new product line. The interest has been huge in it. So we had a double order. We had about 1,000 carbon wheels in the cart this time. And we thought, okay, this will help calm some of the demand down.
Because we normally would bring over about 450 every time.
Carbon. We had some aluminum models. But, you know, so we more than doubled our carbon line.
Yeah.
And it took another 10 minutes to sell 1,000 cycling wheels.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah. So we're at our next container will have 1,500 on it, and
we hope that we have some stock for a while. That's always been our goal. People think that we're like have this like elaborate scheme, but it's really not that. It's just we're growing faster than we can manufacture, or not necessarily manufacture. We can manufacture more, but if you have $1 million worth of product on the shelf at the end of the year, that's a big problem. That's a big oops.
Yep.
Especially when you're self-funded. So we try to regulate and keep as much inventory on the shelf as possible while not having as much inventory on the shelf as possible, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. I mean, the deal is, yes, you want to sell out immediately, but you also, you know, you want to have something.
I want to tell the guys looking next week.
We've taken quite a bit of heat for that, but, you know, my argument has always been we want to be the company that's here in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. We want to make the most intelligent decisions that we can about our finances and our inventory control that we can today so that we can support your product 10, 20 years down the road.
Yep.
If we just want to be this flash in the pan that sells everything that we can and we get greedy, we're going to go away in a year, and that's not going to be good for anyone involved. So we try to be as responsible as we can.
You'll lose quality as well.
If you try to do too much.
Exactly. Actually, if you think about some of the cycling products over the years, like the Quota bikes and guys who come out and they're hot, but then their quality suffers and then they go away.
Yep. Big time. Yep.
Yeah. So who was the first pro athlete to say, listen, I wanna ride Flo?
Josh Schomburger.
Josh.
Australian guy.
Yeah, he's
met
the best.
Met him on Flo Twitch. Yeah, he's a wild card, that fella. Good guy. You know, he was on Flo Twitch, and him and I had kind of chatted a little bit on and off about, you know, training and whatever. And when we started the company, I just reached out to him, and I said, hey, man, would you be interested in maybe just trying these out and giving me some feedback? And that turned into a sponsorship and a friendship, and I think Josh spent close to 2 months over the years that we sponsored him living in my house in America. And
nice.
I actually helped him get all the sponsorships he has today, you know, and it was never, I'm sponsoring you, so I want to lock you in for life. It was, you help me and I'll help you in the early part of your career. And yeah, I took him to Interbike and introduced him to some Jim Felt actually. And, fortunately for him, it helped kickstart his career a little bit. And he called me one day and was upset that, you know, the Felt sponsorship included a SRAM / a Zip deal. And my response to him was, take it.
Exactly.
It's good for you. It's good for us. And it was a great thing. So he was the first guy, and it was a great start for both of us.
I love that. So how important is it for you guys to be out there visibly, you know, riding your bikes so that people see that, okay, these guys didn't just develop this thing. They actually live and breathe it too.
I think it's important. I think, though, today it's a bit different. We've gone to some expos. We've done some booth stuff, and I know that's not physically riding your bike.
Right.
But what we found, especially in the early stages of the companies, that when we were in the expo space, we were actually doing more business on our phones, on social media, and by email than we were in the booth.
Yeah, it's true.
So what we've recognized is that, at least this is our belief, is that if we can be as transparent and open and clear as we can about the products we're making, how we're developing them, why we're developing them, and just giving information to people, that to me
is one of the most important factors of you know, validation on someone else's behalf. If they see me riding a product, or not that there's anything wrong with sponsorship. I think sponsorship is a good thing, and we have some unique kind of things that we do with athletes. But it's kind of like a paid endorsement at that point. But I think from our perspective, from a branding perspective, it's just been a little bit different for us. So I do believe that being on your product is important, but I think standing behind and discussing how and why your product is what it is a bit more important for us than that.
So what's next for Flow? Is there life beyond wheels?
Good question. We actually, about 12 to 18 months ago, canned a project that we were working on. And I don't think we've ever publicly said this, so you're going to get a first preview.
Yeah.
But we were deep into design on a power meter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We had some prototype stuff going on. It was a really cool power meter. I am still sort of disappointed that we didn't bring it out. But what happened in the power meter space was sort of unexpected by us. All of a sudden, there were a million power meters that were extremely low in price.
Yep.
We definitely did not sacrifice on the design of the power meter. It was a crank-based system. It had 12 strain gauges. I mean, it was really good.
Yeah, it had more gauges than any meter in the industry at the time had. There was a
really unique fit system for bottom brackets. Solved a ton of problems. It was just a really cool product. But at the end of the day, I think you have to sit down and look at, is this the best decision for the company? Do we want to compete with a product that there are so many low-priced options today?
Right.
Do we want to compete on a low-margin product? And moving forward with what the brand is and what the brand was, it was something that we felt we sort of had to step back from. So, unfortunately, we don't have a power meter coming out, and if things would have stayed as is, we probably would have. But I think everything happens for a reason. So I guess to jump to your first question, are there things beyond wheels? I think so. Do I know what that is today? Definitely not. We are working on in increasing the wheel line. So, you know, we're bringing out stuff that's track-related, stuff that's disc brake-related.
Ah.
We're also looking at some other things that we're doing. So we are growing. It's just as we continue with the company, I hope we get wiser with our decision-making. So we're definitely growing. And will there ever be another product? I think there will. Today, though, I just don't know what that is.
So when's the next release of wheels?
July, we're expecting to have our Order 26 if you want to call it. That's what we're calling it. Yeah.
And then will that be the 1,500 wheels?
Yeah. That'll be 1,500, yep.
Wow. Congrats, you guys. So excited.
Thank you.
It's always nice to when people follow their dreams and create something. I can't imagine the first time you got your, and I'm imagining there wasn't an invoice. You probably had to pay up front. When you had to pay for that first shipment of wheels, there was probably a lot of gulping going on before sending that wire or sending that check. That's got to be scary.
Well, I'll add to the gulping.
Yes.
So our first payment processor was PayPal.
Yeah.
And we said to PayPal prior to our sale, this is going to be a pre-order. The product will be delivered in 60 to 90 days. Is that okay? And their response was, yes, there's no problem. And I'm sure we had half a dozen or more conversations about that topic. So when you have a sale where you sell 800 cycling with roughly 800 cycling wheels in 45 minutes or whatever it was, and you do, I think it was close to 400 transactions in that time, the majority of them were done in a couple of minutes. We learned that you set off every red flag in the PayPal fraud department. So that order,
yeah,
pre-order, because we had spent all of our money on developing the product, molds and
sure,
custom. I mean, it's a big investment, and we just saved our money as engineers for a long time. So we moved a substantial amount of money the following day after the sale to our bank account to send to the factory. And we got a call immediately from this lady at PayPal. And I picked up the phone, and she said, "Where did the money go?" And I said, "Well, we moved it to our bank account." She said, "That's not your money." And I said, "Well, I'm a little confused. I sold the product. I'm moving it there." And she said, "Until you ship the product, it's not your money, because we are not a financial institution. We are a holding company.
We're holding it for 180 days.
So they said to me, "You either put it back right now, or we will refund all of the credit cards, and you get no money." So
wow.
We moved
and
the money back.
They didn't tell you that ahead of time, that you need to leave it
no.
in there for 6 months. That's sort of an oops on their part.
Yep. Yeah. And then they seized our account for 6 months.
Oh, my God.
So we had, let's just say, a lot of money. Do the math. So we're talking well into six figures worth of cycling wheels that we had to pay for, and we literally had no money. It was sitting in an account, but it was we couldn't touch it for 6 months. So we went to every bank, every loan, everything we could, and we would show them our transaction history with PayPal and said, "The money is there. We just have to ship the product." And nobody would loan us the money.
Even the bank of mom and dad?
Well, yeah. For us, the bank of mom and dad, we don't come for money.
Yeah.
I called my father one day, and we were trying to kind of hide the fact of what was happening, because, you know, we didn't want it to fail. And called my dad and just said, "Dad, I think we're done." And I told him the story, and he said, "I don't have the money, but we have a line of credit on the house. You know, what is your absolute scrape by number?" I gave it to him, and he said, "Well, I don't know what we got, but let me check." And he called me back probably in a couple hours. He said, "I have that much plus $1,000. If you want it, it's yours." And, you
wow.
know, we paid for our own school, and we've never been the ones to, like, ask for stuff like that. And it was really hard to do. But I told my dad, I'm like, "You know, I just don't know if we can do this." And he said, "Look, you're halfway across the English Channel. You got a few options. You can keep swimming, you can sink, or you can go back." And he goes, "You're not sinking. You're not going back." He said, "Keep swimming." And our parents, God love them, gave us the money. They took a huge risk, and it paid off.
Wow.
And
that's amazing.
It paid off for all of us. Yeah. So it was, great move for all of us.
I love that. Hey, John and Chris, thanks so much for taking time to chat. I love learning about Flow Cycling, and I'm very excited about everything you guys are doing. And I'll definitely reach out. Maybe we can do something together with Lieto and with CAF.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Yeah, I'd love it. It'd be great. We'll be at Kona this year, as always, and it's an honor being interviewed by you. I've watched you for years, and it's just so cool to actually be on the show now.
Thank you very much. No problem. Yeah. And definitely we'll be 2 weeks after Kona. You guys may need to come out for our CAF, the San Diego Triathlon Challenge. That is a very, very special weekend. Yeah. It'd be great to have you guys there. Love it.
Definitely. Love to be there.
Cool.
Excellent.
John and Chris Thornham have been our guests. Again, flowcycling.com. Check it out online. The coolest cycling wheels around. We are brought to you by toughmantry.com. Everyone, EVERYWN.org, coming up July 24th, a cool new half marathon of 5K series. RunCatalina.com, Catalina Eco Marathon on Saturday, November 19th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $70 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on iTunes or on BabbittVille.com. And remember, endurance lives here.